This is the Big East Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, here we go on a Saturday morning, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. You bet. The playoffs are here. We are ready for Super Wild Card Weekend. But before we get underway with all of our amazing guests over the next 2 hours, we want to hear from you. You can reach us live on Twitter at eRadioSportsInfo, at eRadioSports.com, PodcastArena.com, and take us anywhere 24/7. Just download the Sports Map Radio app. Well, on this Wild Card Weekend, a total of 6 games, and helping me in studio to break it all down is my producer, and that is John Bellmer. Good morning, John.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. You sound like Scott Burrell's little brother with that raspy voice.
I do. Hopefully it's not too bad. Actually, I'm able to project my voice right now, which is something I haven't been able to do recently. So
I'm getting there. Okay. Well, we're looking forward to you projecting some of the matchups. Which ones intrigue you the most from this weekend?
There's several. Big Ben's last run in going to Kansas City for the Steelers is very interesting. A third time around on the Patriots and the Bills is interesting. But I think the one that I'm most interested in seeing, and I think could be a really fun game, is the 49ers visiting Jerry World in Dallas against the Cowboys.
Okay, so the Cowboys, they are 12-5, and the 49ers are 10-7. How do you think the Cowboys match up against the 49ers?
Well, I think they match up against any of the teams in the NFC. That defense for the Cowboys has been lights out all year. Micah Parsons has been fantastic. And I do think they'll show up at Jerry's World as far as matching up against the 49ers. Jimmy G has been super inconsistent. I just don't trust Shanahan in these situations. And I think the Cowboys' defense is going to play really well. I don't think the offense is going to have to do a lot, honestly.
Okay, John, so let's talk about the offense. I mean, can Dak lead Dallas to their first postseason win in 3 seasons? He is coming off that record-setting performance in Philadelphia.
I mean, I know it was against backups in Philadelphia, but Dak has I was a Dak, I don't want to say hater, but doubter for a long time. And Dak, last year before his injury and what he's done this year has really given me a lot of confidence in what Dak can do.
And, of course, had 5 touchdowns against the Eagles. Yeah. Stick around. Much more coming your way. It is Super Wild Card Weekend. We got you covered. Sports Map Radio Network and the Big East Sports Show. Come on back.
This is the Big East Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome back on this Saturday morning, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. It is Wild Card Weekend, but right now we will turn our attention to some college football, and we're going to visit with one of the greatest leaders and coaches of all time and highlight his incredible career at Kansas State. Such an honor to have with us, and that is Coach Bill Snyder. Good morning, Coach.
Well, good morning, and thank you for the very, very gracious words.
Thank you for joining us, and we are certainly looking forward to highlighting your brand new autobiography, which is titled Bill Snyder, My Life and the Rest of the Story, and just how you were able to turn around and engineer a total transformation of the Wildcat program. But first, you know, let's look in the rearview mirror and let's get your takeaways from the national championship game on Monday night. I mean, Georgia comes out on top in that 33-18 win over the Crimson Tide. I know the Bulldogs were a slight favorite coming into that game, but what were your expectations?
You know, I've tried very hard not to predict ball games because my track record is very bad at that. You know, I think it's so difficult because, you know, no one from the outside really knows what goes on the inside. And there are so many factors that enter into a success or failure in a particular ball game that no one has any awareness of other than, you know, coaches and players. Just from a normal outsider looking in, I was thinking that it would be a very, very close ball game. I thought maybe that Alabama would find a way. But if I had to go to Las Vegas and bet on it, I would have bet Georgia by a small amount.
Legendary Kansas State football coach Bill Snyder with us, Sports Map Radio Network, and we are reflecting on the national championship, Alabama, Georgia. Georgia prevails. And, you know, coming into that game, Kirby Smart, the head coach, had an 0-4 record against Alabama. The odds were not in his favor. But when you watched the game tape, I mean, how were they able to flip the script? How did they make it happen?
I think just the fact that they played to their capability. Throughout the ball game, I think Alabama played well in the first three quarters, and I think made some substantial mistakes in the fourth quarter that were costly in the ball game. I don't think it went dramatically different than the odds makers suggested. I think, you know, the Georgia quarterback made some plays in the ball game. I thought he may not have been his best ball game, I don't know, but he made some substantial plays in the ball game that eventually made a difference.
Well, let's get your impressions of the young dynamic quarterback. You just alluded to him talking about Stenson Bennett. What an inspirational journey, and he has certainly had to overcome a lot of adversity and just being patient, waiting your turn. I mean, what can we learn from him, Coach?
Well, I think just exactly that. You know, the time will come if you work extremely hard. You know, unfortunately, all of the new rules, so to speak, quote unquote, with the NCAA challenges one to do that. You know, if a young person in a program is not the starter and his first day on campus, then he may up and leave, you know, in a heartbeat. And that doesn't, you know, that doesn't encourage working through issues. It doesn't encourage perseverance. It just doesn't encourage a value system that's significant for all of us, but in particular young people today. So it just makes that too easy. And he had that perseverance and fought through the battle and worked extremely hard at it and accepted the challenge. So I'm proud of him. I think he and did so with seemingly, I don't know him personally, but seemingly with a very upbeat attitude about everything. He just seems to be that kind of a person.
Yeah. Georgia's quarterback, Stetson Bennett, certainly defied the odds, led his team to a national championship. What a journey, as I just mentioned, a former walk-on. He was not a five-star prospect. I got to ask you, Coach, I mean, what are your thoughts on star ratings? Are you a believer in the recruiting star system? I mean, can a star predict a recruit's success? I mean, do they matter to you?
Well, they didn't matter to me at all when I was in the profession. But, you know, I don't know what one star means. I don't know what five star means, but by the same token, I think for people who really invest in making those kind of decisions, I think they could probably come reasonably close if they had a small group of people that they were assessing. But you take one organization of, small number of people who are putting the star ranking on every youngster in the nation, that's impossible. You know, we couldn't do it as coaches, and I don't think anybody else can as well. So I think the important thing is, knowing what it is you're looking for. When I say I don't know what a five-star recruit is, we never had a five-star recruit. That doesn't make them bad players or bad people at all, but we had a value system that was important to us, that was first and foremost, followed by certainly athletic ability. But, I think one of the things that we always look for, and I think is significant, is what's the quote-unquote ceiling level. But by that, I mean, yes, where they are in regards to athletic ability, character, et cetera, but where can they be? And if you can find those youngsters that have so much in front of them, there are some players young people coming out of high school who, you know, are in those states where high school football is prevalent, where they are involved 365 days a year, you know, the Texas, and Pennsylvania, California, et cetera. And those youngsters have worked at it so much that they're pretty close to being at the highest level they can be. And yet in states like our own, Kansas, youngsters, good athletes are playing every sport on the venue. And so from a football standpoint, there is a great deal of growth ahead of them. And that's what we look for as well, is where can they be? And we were fortunate. You know, we had a lot of All-Americans and a lot of all-NFL players who came out of high school. It was three-star recruits, so to speak. But, you know, we saw the potential to become, you know, far superior to what they were in high school.
You are listening to the voice of Bill Snyder, legendary Kansas State football coach. He is a College Football Hall of Famer. He was inducted in 2015, highlighting his new book here in just a moment. It is titled Bill Snyder, My Football Life and the Rest of the Story. But right now we're talking about, you know, how do you go about constructing a championship roster? I mean, what does it take, coach, to build a championship team? And what are some of those key elements?
Well, I think, first of all, finding those youngsters, as we just talked about, you know, that can improve immensely, and as they improve, the program improves. I think it was important to me at the very outset is that we make character and an intrinsic value system extremely important. And, you know, in reference to that, it was highly significant that, you know, that we found young people that were committed, that were hard workers, that were disciplined, that were responsible, that were young people that truly cared about, you know, their character. They cared about others. They cared about how complete a player that they could possibly be, how complete a person they could be. Anyway, I go on and on, but you know, a value system that all of us could say, I'd love to have that individual as my son, and add some athletic capabilities to that. That's what we built the program on, and it took a little time because we had. When we first came here, we had 45 players on scholarship. That's when you could have 95. Mm-hmm. So we were the lowest scholarship program in the history of college football. So, but it was you know, the character and intrinsic values of young people that were significant in building the program. Then it was just a step at a time. That standpoint.
The conversation continues with legendary Kansas State football coach Bill Snyder after this quick timeout.
This is the Big East Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour one, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. Right now, let's go back inside the huddle with Bill Snyder, coaching legend. He's a winner. He knows how to make it happen. Coaching legend, the great Bill Snyder, our very special guest at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. I am your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell. Would love to connect with you. You can join us online at Twitter, always live, at eRadio Sports. You can email the show, info@eradiosports.com. Go back and listen to this exclusive interview with Coach Bill Snyder at podcastarena.com, and you can take us anywhere, anytime, 24/7. Download our app, Sports Map Radio. You know, it's interesting, the 2021 college football season Certainly, Coach, has been really crazy. Georgia goes on to win the national title. So many shocking coaching changes. I just wanted you to kind of give us your thoughts on just the recent coaching moves. I mean, what does this mean for college football? Lincoln Riley goes to USC, Brian Kelly to LSU. I mean, college football, it is changing dramatically.
Well, in so many ways. I hate to see the kind of movement that is there from a coaching standpoint. Salaries have gone out the roof. And when you think of, you know, somebody being offered a $7 million raise, it's pretty difficult to turn that down, as is going to be the case with young people who now have the capacity to do exactly that. So it's, you know, there's more turmoil to come. But, for those who make a commitment, we say players make a commitment, but coaches make commitments also. And, when you make that commitment and then you break it for whatever reason, so let me put it that way.
Yeah,
I think that that's questionable, in my mind. Like I said, if they offer you $10 million, that's another story. But outside of that, it brings some serious questions about where the game is going in that respect. Loyalty to a university. Loyalty to the people that hired you, et cetera.
Yes, we talk about the coaching moves. I just mentioned Lincoln Riley, but Oklahoma has a brand new head coach, a gentleman you are familiar with, and that, of course, is one of your former players and coaches in Brent Venables. So let's talk about what are your expectations from him and Norman?
Well, I don't place expectations on anyone, but I think Brett will do very well. He's also close and worked with Bobby Stoops, and Bobby's still, actively invested in the program.
Yes.
And I think they will. He'll help give Brent some guidance, and Brent's a hard worker. He's knowledgeable. He cares about young people. I think he'll do quite well.
What do you remember the most about him when he was a little guy, when you started recruiting him back in the day?
Well, when we started recruiting him, he was another one of those young guys, probably didn't have any stars. But I loved, first of all, his character was most significant to us. But I loved his competitive spirit. I loved the fact that he practiced every bit as hard as he played. And it was constant. I mean, it was every single moment of every single practice. And he was dead serious about it. Improvement to him was highly significant. And he worked every day. He always, even when he was in high school, he always wanted to know what he could do in order to become better. Not collectively, but just on that given day, just really dedicated to what he was doing.
Coach Venables has certainly gone on record to share just what a privilege it was to play for you, to work alongside you, to be a part of your coaching staff. Here it is. It's his first time as a head coach in a brand new role. I don't want to put you on the spot. I mean, but what kind of advice would you give to him? I mean, because, the expectations, the pressure, it's high. It's hard, at a Division I level, especially at the University of Oklahoma.
Well, I think the most important thing is you don't forget how you got there. I mean, there's a reason why people felt he was qualified enough to be in that position, which is one of the most prominent positions in the country. And, sometimes people try to be somebody else, and that's insignificant. He needs to be Brent Venables, and I'm quite certain he will be. understand that the hard work, the dedication, the intense commitment to what he's doing has gotten him where he is and needs to continue.
And he's been very, very patient. We are going one-on-one, legendary Kansas State football coach, college football Hall of Famer. And you know what? You've got to go out and get a copy of his new books. Our friends at Triumph Books has put this interview all together, assisted and provided the helping hand. It is titled Bill Snyder, My Football Life and the Rest of the Story. And you know, Coach, you're what, 82 years young. You've had time to just, you know, reflect on your illustrious career. Do you miss it? Do you miss being out there?
Well, you know, I retired twice.
Yes.
And the first time it took me about a year to get over. This time it took about 6 months. And I'm perfectly comfortable with retirement. I can't say that I'm retired because there's so much on my plate. But as far as not being actively involved in football, I'm not missing that. No.
Bill Snyder transformed the program at Kansas State. Brand new book out, My Football Life and the Rest of the Story, a compelling read that shares his story of becoming a head coach at Kansas State in 1988 and taking over a program that had not won a conference title since 1934. I'm just kind of curious, how did you get into coaching? I mean, what inspired you to be a coach?
Well, probably my mother. I think as much as anything,
aww,
I was raised in a single parent home. My mother and father divorced when I was, I think about 6 years old or younger, perhaps. And my mother worked long, hard hours to raise me. And she worked 12 hours a day, 6 days a week at a department store. And so she would send me to the YMCA. And so after school, I'd go to the YMCA, and it was always sports. So you're actively involved in basketball and track and a variety of other things. And so that was of interest to me. And as I, you know, participated in locally in every sport, it became apparent to me that that's kind of what I did, so to speak. So I always thought from a very young age that I would probably be a coach. When I went to high school and was around coaches more readily, I was enamored by the coaches at the high school that I went to, and they always treated me well, and I just picked up on that, and so felt that's what I'll do. So it never really, you know, I think it was always with me. And I was a swimming coach. I coached the St. Joseph, Missouri swimming club when I was in high school. I helped start the swimming team when I went to William Jewell College and coached that. So I, you know, was involved in it virtually all my life.
We're wrapping up our time. It is truly a captivating autobiography from the architect of Kansas State football. What an honor to have on our program this morning for the very first time, the great Bill Snyder. Congratulations, Coach, on your new book and just a spectacular coaching career. 215 victories. You're the guy. You know how to make it happen. So what an inspirational interview. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. You're very thoughtful and very kind.
Absolutely. Take care, stay safe, and much more coming your way at Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back with the Big E Sports Show.
is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Saturday morning, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We are going to continue to recap the college football playoff national championship game between Georgia and Alabama. These two teams, of course, appear destined to get there in advance. And we're delighted to have back with us from the Washington Post their columnist, and that is Chuck Culpepper. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, Alyssa. Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful to have you back on the program. And how about those Georgia Bulldogs? They finally break through with a 33-18 win over the Crimson Tide. And, I mean, I got to say, the Bulldogs, they were a slight favorite going into that game. But did you think they would ultimately come out on top? I mean, did you expect them to win?
I did think they would win. It's not often that I get that right. But I did think they would win because it's so hard to beat a team of that caliber twice. And I think when Alabama found its way to the title game, it probably would have rather faced just about anybody else. And that's even with the backdrop of how Georgia has had this sort of, I don't know what you would call it, hex or something like that, or the inability to beat Alabama in a series of games across the years in which Georgia would build these leads and then sometimes two possession leads in the second half. And then Alabama would invariably win. So the idea that Georgia would win did seem a little bit nutty to me, but I just thought about that thing of how good they were, how they were the dominant number one team all season long, and how it's so hard to beat somebody twice.
Yeah, and it just seemed like it was their year. When we think about Georgia, though, let's go back to when they lost to Alabama in the SEC Conference Championship game. What kind of adjustments did they make?
I would have loved to have been in the film rooms, you know, and geek out on what they were spotting and what they were adjusting. I think Kirby Smart, the head coach, said they simplified some things. I mean, I guess that's part of it. One thing is that the Alabama offensive line had such an extraordinary game on December the 4th in Atlanta. You know, this to play like that again against a front seven of that caliber. They still played really well, I thought, Bama's offensive line. But to play that well again was unlikely, I think, and especially against a group of, you know, players and athletes and thinkers about the game that talented and that rarefied as Georgia's were. The pressure on Bryce Young, the Heisman Trophy winner, the Alabama quarterback, it wasn't, you know, overwhelming in the championship game, as it was non-existent almost in the SEC championship game, but in the national championship game, it was better. And that was enough to, you know, to help turn it the other way.
He is back with us from the Washington Post, their columnist, Chuck Culpepper. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Chuck Culpepper One. He's got some great posts online. You just mentioned Georgia's head coach, Kirby Smart. And, you know, it's so interesting. Coming into that national championship game on Monday night, he had an 0-4 record against Alabama. I mean, the odds were not in the Bulldogs' favor. So let's talk about and dissect just some of the necessary adjustments they made late in the game to, you know, flip the script and get that momentum going in their direction. Because you know what, Chuck? Momentum is a beautiful thing.
Well, and you're looking midway through the fourth quarter, there they were trailing 18-13,
right.
A strange score, you know, a clunky little score, but a taut, tight game. And there they were. And I guess it looked to me like just that feeling where sometimes you just say, okay, look, I've had enough of this, and I'm going to just channel my concentration and my focus. Because what happened right after that is that four-play 75-yard drive and that great catch by Mitchell in the end zone on the right, you know, 40-yard pass up the right side from Stetson Bennett. And that drive, just four plays, play action, they went to that after having run successfully on, you know, a couple previous possessions. So they went to play action, and that right there, just it just looked like, you know, they were better. They were a better team that night, and it just looked like there was just an intent there that was discovered right then. And then the next drive, the next one where they got the 15-yard touchdown pass to Brock Bowers, that too just looked like, you know, mastery. It looked like they had reached the point of, you know, maybe there was some fatigue on the other side, I don't know, but It just looked like Georgia just said, it had the feel of, I've had enough at that point. Had enough. It's time to get it right.
Well, let's talk about Georgia's quarterback, Stetson Bennett. He certainly, it's been highlighted, it's been chronicled, it's been talked about. I mean, he's had to overcome a lot of adversity throughout his career. What do you think his future looks like on the professional level?
Gosh, I would think, well, definitely in a way that we wouldn't have thought last year, he's going to get a shot. You know, definitely in a way that you wouldn't think about somebody who started out at Georgia as a walk-on and then, you know, left Georgia for junior college in Mississippi, came back to Georgia. You know, and one of the things that last year Georgia was playing Auburn in 2020, you know, when the crowds were not as big as they were as normal, and it was at Athens, and I remember he was playing quarterback, and Georgia beat Auburn that night, but then lost to Alabama soon after that. But I just remember looking at, you know, his profile photos, and the one in Mississippi Junior College was kind of looked more like a college kid, you know, kind of little raggedy,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, you're right.
Charming in that way, definitely. And then the one at Georgia looked all cleaned up. Even the hair looked, you know, more shorter and more. It was a fun contrast. And that's the way I kind of think of it now, is you wouldn't have thought of this guy as getting a, you know, a big, but somebody's going to give him a chance. Now, we don't ever know. Look at how the drafts go. We don't ever know. Nobody seems to know if somebody's really going to pan out. And nobody knows till you throw them into that NFL chaos, the speed of it. But we now know, I think, that if you just look at it, even through a season where a lot of fans, a lot of people were calling for him to be replaced, I think he's going to get a shot now that we wouldn't have foreseen 6 years ago.
Chuck Culpepper from the Washington Post, our special guest at Sports Map Radio Network. We are doing a full recap of the Natty, the national championship. The Georgia Bulldogs prevail, and zeroing in right now on their quarterback, Stetson Bennett. And, you know, when talking with some of your colleagues, what insight can you share as far as Stetson's inner fortitude? Where does that drive come from? Because I love what he said about, you know, how life is tough and you got to work through it. And I'm thinking, amen, brother.
On December the 4th in Atlanta, in that interview room, that Georgia interview room, you know, he had had a night that wasn't that bad, but it just wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
An afternoon and an early evening, I should say. That game started at 4 o'clock. You know, if you look at the numbers, he had two interceptions. One was a pick six. This is in the SEC championship game. And so we go into that interview room, and there's a question, and it's a completely fair question, about, hey, is it time to consider, you know, going with now the backup, who actually started the season as the starter, and is it time to make a switch, you know? And Kirby Smart gave the only answer probably you can give if you're a coach in that situation. You know, we evaluate every position all the time, and that's
right.
The politic answer, the one that you kind of have to give, especially when that quarterback is sitting next to you, as he was on that interview dais and that night. And in that moment, I remember looking at Bennett and thinking, boy, when I was that young, you know, I just think that would have been a really hard for me to handle, the whole discussion going on right in front of me. But these athletes, they learn that. It's one of probably the most valuable things they do learn, the things that make them strengthening things that they do learn. And so I was just impressed. And, you know, he's just sat there with kind of a poker face or whatever. He sat there and gamely, and just as if he knew it was part of the deal. You know, he often talks about shutting out all that kind of talk, you know, that you kind of have to do to play that position, especially in the American Southeast. But I thought I saw some fortitude right there. But then it was inconclusive all the way into the middle of the fourth quarter, I think, as to how sturdy it was. And then came those two drives, and it just kind of said, okay, this guy really had it inside. And, you know, and then later after the game, he says, I just didn't want to be I was determined not to be the reason we lost, because he had just fumbled to set up Alabama's only touchdown. So I just think in those moments, you learn. Those are the only moments where you really learn how much somebody's got in there. And it seems to have been pretty considerable. from that.
Well, Stetson certainly knows a thing or two about focus, because I'm sure you saw the Good Morning America when he was a little inebriated and some of the answers. I mean, kind of what was your takeaways from that? I can't believe that they allowed him to go on national television.
I wish we'd do more real stuff like that.
You know? Seriously?
Just the real.
Okay.
Yeah. I just wish we'd see the real more, and then we could calibrate.
That was definitely real.
Yeah, we could recalibrate all of our sort of standards about this from, you know, to make to make appearances on TV like that match real life more accurately.
Hey, we are so glad you're with us Saturday morning. Sports Map Radio Network. You bet, it's the Big E Sports Show, and I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell. Wild Card Weekend. But right now, we're doing a recap of the national championship. We're talking about the Georgia Bulldogs with our very special guest, Chuck Culpepper from the Washington Post. We have highlighted the Bulldogs' offense and their outstanding quarterback in Stetson. But let's talk about the Georgia's defense, because it certainly lived up to its billing. And why were they all season long just so efficient and now ranked as one of the best defenses ever?
Well, they were just something to watch. And, you know, we had actually at the Washington Post planned a big project to introduce them as individuals, because it was one of the best defenses in college football history. You know, and when there's a defense like that, you end up saying, well, the front seven, you know, and you look at the top 10 tacklers, and because quarterback is the glamorous position, offense is the glamour, you kind of lump the defense all together, you know, into one, rather than looking at, like, where they come from, what's their, you know, there was a lot of experience on it. And so we were kind of thinking, to, since they were going to be one of the best defenses ever, to kind of pinpoint their, in, who are they as individuals? Well, then they go into that Alabama game on December 4th, and they give up 536 yards. And this was just totally mysterious, I think. It's just not in any evil way, but just one of those things in sports where you're looking at and you say, I cannot believe what I'm observing right now. Receivers so open. So then they were not one of the best defenses in history. They were just a really, 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 really good one. And then comes the title game. They kept keeping them out of the end zone and the red zone. They gave up a good bit of yards. I think it was like close to 400, more than they usually do. But then that, you know, they were playing a higher caliber opponent. But they did succeed and excel in that, against Alabama on the second go round. So I don't think we call them the greatest ever, but we call them just a marvel to watch, a pleasure to watch for anybody who likes football. Just an experienced group, and a group that, it was so clear from how they played, that just really wanted to be great, wanted to do all the grinding little, boring little things you have to do to be great. So that worthy of so much appreciation for their, how they worked together and how, you know, how compelling they were, you know, rushing, and how compelling they were with speed, you know, especially against Michigan in the semifinal, how they just seemed to turn up right away at whatever was going on, you know, and, you know, completely bottle up most of what Michigan tried. So, yeah, big, big appreciation for getting to watch this year.
The college football conversation continues with Washington Post columnist Chuck Culpepper after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour one, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to continue the college football conversation with Chuck Culpepper from the Washington Post. We are winding down our time. Washington Post columnist Chuck Culpepper with us at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Chuck Culpepper 1. And, you know, we've talked a lot about just this historic season for the Georgia Bulldogs, winning the national championship. But we have to give Nick Saban and Alabama a lot of credit, because you know they're going to be back in the college football playoff next year.
Yes, and it's just, you know, it's gone on for so long. I did a story where the theme of it was, what's it like to be an Alabama fan? Because most fans are accustomed to waiting. Georgia fans just waited 41 years for a national championship. We see those kinds of gaps all the time. The Milwaukee Bucks, 50 years last year, and so on. And in Alabama, you get one every three, at least, sometimes.
They're kind of spoiled, yes, Chuck.
Yeah. Well, they just often think about the fact that I better appreciate this because one day this is going to be over. But then one guy from class of 2000 graduate was telling me, he said, you know, I tell my sons all the time, they're teenagers, says, this is going to be over one day. I assure you this is going to be over one day. And then the next year we end up back in the title game again, you know. And so that my sons don't believe me anymore, I think. But, yeah, I mean, Nick Saban is one of the youngest septuagenarians in history, I think. He's not what 70-year-old men look like when I was growing up anyway. Uh-huh. Or acted like, and I just see it. You know, his recruiting classes are great, and I just see them as continuing to be around. And maybe you have this moment where you get tired of them, and maybe that moment goes by, and we're in a moment where you're just like, you know, this is really something to watch in its duration.
Georgia takes care of business in that 33-18 win over the Alabama Crimson Tide. What a true pleasure to have back with us from the Washington Post. That is Chuck Culpepper. Have a great weekend, and we look forward to continuing this conversation this spring. Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you so much, Alyssa. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network. Come on back.